Welcome to the Vancouver International Film Festival podcast, a podcast dedicated to some of the most exciting live conversations that happen at the festival and our year-round program. I'm your host, Ken Tsui, Director of Creative Engagement and Live Programming here at the festival. In this episode, we present Dr. Jane Goodall. As part of our Impact Programming stream, the Vancouver International Film Festival hosted a special charity screening of Brett Morgan's 2017 documentary, Jane, followed by a Q&A with the famed conservationist. Dr. Jane Goodall is an anthropologist, the foremost expert on chimpanzees, and above all else, a cultural icon. Morgan's documentary follows Dr. Goodall's groundbreaking research in Tanzania and the way that she challenged male-dominated scientific communities with her chimpanzee research. She joined us on the festival stage for an exclusive conversation after the screening.
Give you my version. That's especially for you guys up there.
So Jane's a bit of a kidder, so when we were describing the stage and we were going to have to walk out here in single file, she said, "I think I'm going to pretend I'm falling," and she didn't go through with it, but here she is. So get used to it. That's what you're in for tonight. So if she looks like she's falling. See, the problem is now it'll be like Wolf. If you start to fall, we'll all just laugh, and you'll end up down.
No, there's some of you guys in the front row run to catch me, right? Yes, you see? Hey.
So we thought we'd have a bit of a conversation, and normally when I'm with Jane, we're talking about the work, we're talking about her life, but this is obviously about the film. So we've come up with some questions that quite often Jane gets asked about the film, and after seeing it, I think you'll probably want to know some of these, hear some of the answers to this. So the film is really incredible. So it's always interesting to hear from Jane how she felt when she first saw it.
Well, it was very interesting because the way that this whole film came about, I was approached by somebody from the Geographic, and they said, "We have kind of rediscovered in an archive this footage that was all the remnants from the early Geographic films that had never been seen. And would I be interested in a retrospective of my time at Gombe?" And I said, "Well, there's been so many films made about me and the chimps, come on. Not another one." And the Jane Goodall Institute in US, they were very keen for this to be done, so they had their own conversations with the Geographic. And in the end, they said to me, "All it will require from you is 1 3-hour interview." That's what they said. And the director, Brett Morgan, who has done an amazing job, he and I never met, and for some odd reason, he never contacted me about the tremendous, he was confronted with boxes in all higgledy-piggledy order, without any labels, not in consecutive order, no sound attached to the film reels, and this wasn't digital, this was the old, for some of you who remember the old celluloid film, you know, in these rolls and spools. And it took over 4 years to work out which chimps were which and the order of things, and involved reading all the books. And the first time I saw it, it was basically completely finished. And he sent the producer over to England to show me the film. And right from that moment, but especially seen on a big screen like this, it's the only documentary out of all those that have been made that takes me right back into my 26-year-old skin. And I think it's because, you know, it was that original footage, and he had the idea of using my voice, which he got from the I did an audio recording of one of my books, so he took my voice from that. So it was my voice giving life to what I felt at the time. So it wasn't some commentator who knew nothing about me or the chimps, you know, kind of talking away about what was going on. It was me. And I think that was one of the things that made it just seem so real. And so I just think Brett did an incredible job.
And when you were at TIFF and Brett Morgan was on the stage with Jane talking about making the film, and if any of you have seen Brett Morgan's film on Kurt Cobain, it was a really amazing documentary, but he said in a question about going from Kurt Cobain to Jane Goodall that she was the actual rock star that he really adored. So, yeah, there was quite a crush going on, I think. Actually, maybe, Jane, you could just talk about the soundtrack, too. I've been lucky to be at Gombe, and the sound on there really does take you back. And talk about the film sound
yeah,
behind.
Yeah, well, I just think that the authentic sounds of Gombe make the film really special. So the insects and the birds. And what's the man's name who made... He went out to Gombe for nearly a month, and I'm forgetting his name now, but he is the absolute number one, calls himself a soundscape artist. And in the terrible fires in California, he lost his house, he lost everything. Fortunately, he had backup of the sounds. Yeah. But I'll think of his name in a minute, and I'll tell you when I do. But I think having him there for so long and having his sounds were very, very special. Mm.
The movie's been called a love story, and on so many fronts it is. Would you agree with that?
Yeah, I think it's a love story in several different aspects. It's a love story definitely between me and the chimps. There's no question about that. And it didn't happen straight away. You know, people so often think that I went to Africa with a resolve to study chimpanzees, but that wasn't so. I would have studied any animal. It was Louis Leakey who suggested the chimpanzees. Mm. You know, how amazing is that? The animal most like us, Jane, with no degree, and I get offered this incredible opportunity. So I didn't know anything really about chimpanzees when I began, certainly not in the wild, but neither did anybody else. Nobody had done it before. That was lucky, too. So it was a gradual... you know, love story with David Greybeard and Flo and Flint and Fifi and all those chimpanzees that were almost like part of my family. And then, of course, there was the love story with me and Hugo. And then there's the love of a mother with her child. I mean, wasn't Grub a gorgeous baby? Don't you think so? I'd completely forgotten how enchanting he was. And I love that scene when he's 3 years old and that interviewer flies out and asks him to make animal sounds. It was just so perfect. Somebody said to me the other day, people are strange. They said to me, they said to me, don't you think you were exploiting your child? And I said, what, exploiting him? Asking him to show off the way he can make animal sounds. Anyway, so it was that was a love story. And it was also, you know, the love of my mother and me. So I think it was a love story in many ways. And added to that, there was my growing love of an understanding of the forest. Mm-hmm.
So the film recently won 2 Emmys, one for director Brett Morgan and for Hugo and his cinematography. How did you feel about those wins?
Well, I was really, really happy for Brett because although he's had many accolades, he never got an Emmy for directing a film. So this was absolutely super. And he was, you know, over the moon about it, really excited. And then for Hugo, you have to realize that when people go out to make a wildlife film today, they have digital, they have fairly light equipment. There's usually a little team. Hugo was on his own. He had one of these old-fashioned, I mean, most people don't remember these cameras. It was an old Bolex. They were about this big, and they had to be mounted on a wooden tripod because they were so heavy. And they had this celluloid film. You had to thread it through all these sprockets and round these sprockets and through the gate and round some more sprockets. And if you... So he had to put a black bag over his head because you hadn't to let the light in. And if you got one little hair in the gate, the entire film would be ruined. So you had to make sure that you brushed the gate clean. And it just so different from the digital technology of today. So the fact that he managed with his patience and his understanding of animals, which was the love affair between us, you know, to get this footage, which still today, with a little bit of, they have very clever ways of restoring some of the color, which obviously fades over the many, many years since it was made, and that it can be so vivid and so compelling, and so showing his breadth of love and understanding of animals. So it's not just the chimpanzees, but all that amazing footage of the insects and the birds, and then on the Serengeti, which was his real love. So I'm thrilled. It was the very first posthumous award that the Emmys have given.
Oh, so, that's nice.
Yeah. And especially exciting for his son and his grandchildren. They are so proud.
That's lovely. So there were a lot of challenges that you faced during your time at Gombe, living with wild chimpanzees, limited finances, Hugo arriving into your space, raising grub. It's hard to believe you were able to keep going and deal with it all. What was the secret to doing that?
Well, I think the secret, Andrea, was, you know, it was something I was passionate about. I was chosen by Louis Leakey. And so it was very important to me that I live up to him because so many people criticized everything. And so what kept me going, I've always been very obstinate. You know that.
Not saying a word.
And
so it's payday on Friday.
You know, I don't give up easily. I wasn't brought up to give up easily. And I was determined to make it work. And somehow, the more challenging the situation is, the more determined I became. And if people were critical, well, I'm going to carry on anyway, because it was something I had to do. And you know, honestly, looking back over my life, it's almost as though I was put here for a purpose and that there was a mission. And going through my life, and I've often done this, there were points along the journey where all I had to do was to make the right decision. And I think looking back that at each of these points I did make the right decision, and that's brought me to this bizarre life I have today. But you know, what kept me going was determination and obstinacy.
Right. So is there a fictionalized version of your life on the horizon? And if so, who do you think should play you? Because I know people have asked you.
Well, honestly, I don't have time to watch movies. You know, in the old days I used to, and some of you will remember going back, way back to The King and I and Brief Encounter and those movies, which are the ones I used to watch, and going back to the days of Frank Sinatra. And, you know, that's my era. And after that, I was out in Gombe. And I wasn't watching movies anymore. We didn't have little gadgets that you could take out with you into the field and watch movies on. There was no Netflix. There was nothing like that. And so, and then when I was back, I was working on my PhD, I was writing books, and there just wasn't time to watch movies. So I'm not familiar with the film stars of today. I really am not. But and, you know, my first experience with a movie, when I was young, we had so little money. And, of course, I don't know if I said it in the film, I think I did, about reading Tarzan of the Apes when I was 10 and falling in love with Tarzan and being really jealous because he married the wrong Jane. Well, he did, right? Yeah, thank you. Yes. So, anyway, so Mum, knowing how much I loved Tarzan, she saved up money so that when the first Tarzan movie came over, this was a big treat. And of course, it was Johnny Weissmuller playing Tarzan. So she took me, I think I was 12 or something like that, she took me this big treat, and after about 15 minutes, I began to cry and I sobbed. She had to take me out. She said, "Jane, whatever's the matter?" And I said, "But that wasn't Tarzan." So this actually makes you think. When I grew up, there was no television. And so when you were a child, you had books and the radio. And so for me, Tarzan was the Tarzan I had imagined. And today, children are in a way deprived of that kind of imagination when they read a book, because nearly all of those books are made into films or on television or something like that. Mm-hmm. So since that point, I've never watched another Tarzan movie at all, ever.
But I thought it was interesting when the film played and someone asked, and I had the question asked of me too, who was it that was playing Jane in this movie?
Oh, yes. Brett Morgan has been asked, he said 9 times, "Who did you find to play Jane?" I actually heard a sound guy in the backstage, and he said to me, he said, "Who did they get to play you?" But anyway, the question you asked was, yes, there is Leonardo DiCaprio's film, whatever you call it, I don't know what you call these things, Appian Way, his film studio. They do want to make a film on Jane. They are looking for somebody who can act Jane. And it's kind of, the contract was finally signed last week. Yeah. So it's moving ahead. But I can add to that, that people wanted to make a movie about me with actresses, oh, for at least 30 years. And I always said, no, 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 no. You know, the number of times I've been asked about Gorillas in the Mist, they think I'm Diane Fossey because Gorillas in the Mist. I remember a flight attendant, and she came up to me, she was very polite. At the end of a flight, she said, "Oh, Miss Fossey, I'm so proud to have had you on my flight." And I smiled at her, and I thought, you know, she's going to say to somebody, "Guess who I had on my flight today?" And they're going to say, "Don't you know she's dead?" And you go, "Oh, my God." So, you know, so anyway, the reason I didn't want this film made is, you know, there's the real Jane, then there's Sigourney Weaver playing Diane Fossey. And do I want another Jane out there to confuse the issue even more? So I always said, well, maybe when I'm 90. Well, as I'm almost 85, and the film will not be made very quickly because obviously the chimps have to be digital, or else like in Planet of the Apes, you know, people that play like playing Caesar,
right.
Which is brilliant. I'm in love with Caesar, quite honestly. It was a very clever movie. I really, really like that most recent Planet of the Apes. So I will be kind of getting towards, but you know, the last time I was talking to Leonardo, I said, you know, wouldn't it be great if at some point, before the film or after the film, I could say to you, you know, my job now is to take a message around the world that we need to protect these chimpanzees and the forests they live in and therefore all the other amazing biodiversity. And I go around the world and there's all kinds of people, yes, who do know about Jane. But I said, Leo, far more people, you have a huge audience of different kinds of people that I can't reach. So we have a little scene, maybe around a campfire, and I can say to him, you know, can you help me spread my message around the world in your circles? And we thought that would be a really nice little thing to add to the film and make it genuine, show people, you know, that it isn't Jane, but Jane wants this, because Jane wants this to go out further and further so we can save these amazing beings and their forests.
The men in your life. What? It's amazing, the men in your life. No, I think it's fantastic. And
you don't know about all the men in my life.
No, but I've seen you in action, and I don't
I
know.
Beg your pardon.
No.
What are you saying?
Wait. No, what I mean is, what's amazing to me about this film is Jane talks about being, you know, the cover girl for National Geographic, and I'm telling you...
Yeah, because of my legs.
Well, from here up, you're still on the covers of a lot of magazines, and all I'm saying is there is something about someone like Jane that still astounds me at your age about the men in your circle. I mean, it's a really lovely thing, and it's just, I don't know why I had to say that there, but it's the name talk. Well, it's just you're dropping Leo's name and things like that. I just wanted to say, I don't get it, but men just love you, I'm just telling you. So, I'm going to hear about this on the way back to the hotel.
Well, glad like, men love me.
I know.
But,
anyway,
but
I've seen
but
that.
Women love me too. And let me tell you, kids love me. I mean, kids all over the world love me. Students love me. Old people seem to love me. Animals love me. So I don't know what it is. I often wonder what it is about me. I don't know why what's happened to me has happened to me. And that's why I said earlier, I think I was put here for a reason. And quite honestly, if we think about the mess in the world today, if we think about the fighting, if we think about the political infighting and divides, isn't love something really, really important?
So there are a few years between Jane in the film and the Jane sitting here, but you still seem to be as active and young at heart. What keeps you ticking?
Probably all these men loving me.
I'm,
by the way, a lot of people like on late night show, they always say, Jane, you should come on the road with us. And when I meet people, they say, well, we've read everything you ever wrote, and we've been to some of your lectures, but we never realized that you were so funny.
I think it's partly, you know, because I'm feeding you the lines about the lines. So it's a combo here.
Well, watch me on some of the late night shows.
Oh. I have fun.
And by the way, you know, this is something we don't appreciate enough. And it's what I tell, you know about our youth program, Roots and Shoots, which is now in 80 countries. And we've got about 150,000 active groups of all ages of young people working to make the world a better place for people, animals, and the environment. And I always say to them, you know, one thing when you think about what you're going to do, and you work out how you're going to do it, and you roll up your sleeves and you go out and you take action, whether it's clearing up litter, planting trees, volunteering in shelters, growing organic food, whatever it is, if you don't have fun doing it, fun with your friends, then the whole project will fade away and fizzle. We need laughter in our lives. It's really important, and I mean this. And there's a group of Buddhist monks, and once a week, on I think it's on a Friday, they are made to climb up a quite a steep mountain, and they have to spend 1 hour up there belly laughing. And this is, you know, it's good for us to laugh. That's why I like making people laugh. So thank you for feeding me lines to make everybody laugh.
Well, I'll just end by saying, Jane, as I always do when we're together, I tell the crowd of people that you don't take any fees from these events. And again, I will say that's a testament to her commitment to improving this world for people, animals, and the environment. And I know as an organization, we really, really appreciate it. And I'm sure this crowd who's stuck around for this lighthearted conversation also appreciates that from someone like Jane. So thank you for being here.
Thanks for listening to this conversation recorded live from the Vancouver International Film Festival. Be sure to subscribe so you don't miss an episode. Creator Talks and Masterclasses are programmed by Fran Bergen. The podcast is created by Ellen Hadley and Clem LeBay on the unceded territories of the Squamish, Musqueam, and Tsleil-Waututh Nation.